You're stuck in traffic.
For moving them down to the end.
I think we can begin with the formalities a little bit. How far away is Steve, Susan?
Mr. Chair, he should be here momentarily. He was in Sea Grove about 45 minutes ago. Thank you. So he's on route.
We could sing and dance and stuff like that if you like. Why don't we go ahead and call a meeting to order, and before we get into significant debate or whatever, we'll just call a timeout until Steve gets here. If that's okay with everyone. Welcome to the meeting of Triumph Gulf Coast. Thanks for coming. Let's open up with a roll call. Susan?
Mr. Benz?
Here.
Mr. Benezzi?
Here.
Mr. Connolly?
Here.
Dr. Dana?
Here.
Senator Gay?
Here.
Mr. Riggs? Mr.
Schott. Here.
Okay, let the records reflect there's a quorum present. Everyone has had a chance to look at the minutes of the previous meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So move.
Second.
Motion the second. Are there questions? Is there discussion? Are there objections to the motion? Seeing none, show the motion passes. Commissioner Bill Dozier is here somewhere, I believe. Commissioner, and I think you want to say a few words, and thank you for letting us use your fine place here. It's really neat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to welcome everybody here, welcome you here, and say thank you for coming to Bay County to hold this meeting, to all the Triumph Board members, and just wanted to just let you know how much we appreciate you coming to Bay County and listening to the people of our area and having your meeting. So thank you very much and welcome.
Commissioner, thank you very much. And again, thank you for allowing us to be here today.
Great. I'm glad you're here.
All right. Thank you. Thanks. Why don't we call about a two-minute timeout, because we're getting ready to get on a major topic from Senator Gates. How about if we call just a two-minute recess till Steve Riggs gets here? Y'all can talk now. You can talk amongst yourselves. It's okay. It's all right. Mr. Riggs is here. Steve, we got the meeting cranked up and got through the formalities, and we are to the point of the report from the Program Administration Economic Advisor Selection Committee. So let's declare the recess at an end, and we're back on business. And Senator Gates, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your subcommittee dealing with the selection of an economic advisor and setting in motion the process for program administration has met twice. We determined to try to work out an agreement with Dr. Rick Harper. First, we attempted to work that agreement out through the University of West Florida. Dr. Harper, of course, is a longtime professor there, economist there. But as it turned out, Dr. Harper retired this year, or is in the process of retiring this month from the University of West Florida. So we wound up discussing a potential relationship with him directly. Scott Remington, our legal counsel, handled that negotiation. And, Mr. Speaker, if you would allow us, first I'd like to yield to Mr. Remington to explain where we are in our negotiations with Dr. Harper, and then take questions, sir.
Mr. Remington, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your package is a proposed engagement letter between Dr. Harper and the Triumph Board. As Senator Gates noted, upon Dr. Harper's retirement from the university on December 20th of this month, he will begin his new career as the Rick Harper PhD, Inc., and we have a proposed contract for Rick Harper, PhD, Inc. to serve as the economic advisor to the Triumph Board. The scope of representation for the services he will provide are contained in paragraphs lettered A through K in the proposed engagement letter. The contract is a three-year agreement that can be canceled by either party with 90 days notice. The fees and costs for his services is annually $113,091.45. That amount was arrived at as being exactly to the penny one half of his salary and benefits as a professor at UWF, and essentially we are hiring him for the equivalent of half-time work. How we arrived at that number, and I've got backup for that number from the University of Dr. Harper. I can share with the board if you'd like. If there, we don't see a conflict of interest on the horizon, but in the event a conflict did arise, the agreement would be that the board could designate a conflict economic advisor to look at a particular proposal if they felt like that Dr. Harper couldn't do so or he felt that he couldn't do so. There's an indemnification agreement for Dr. Harper, which essentially employment for Triumph, we would indemnify him as if he were an employee, even though it's a third-party contractor. Dr. Harper, individually and his PhD, will be subject to the Florida Code of Ethics for public employees. We wrote that into the contract, although Dr. Harper's not signing the contract individually. He and his lawyers have both said if we need to, he'll sign a separate document verifying that he's subject to the Code of Ethics individually and through his corporation. The effective date of the agreement is December 20th of this year, and if the board concurs with the terms of the engagement letter, it's been already previously executed by Dr. Harper, so it's ready to be signed today.
Any questions of our council members? I think Susan Skelton has sort of kept us up to speed on what's been going on with negotiations, and I'll turn the microphone back over to Senator Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If there are no questions, I think it's fair to say that we're very pleased as a committee that we were able to successfully negotiate with Dr. Harper. He is the quintessential economic expert for Northwest Florida, and we look forward to our relationship with him. And if it's in order, Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the subcommittee's recommendation that our agreement with Dr. Harper be executed.
There's a motion. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Okay. Stan Connolly seconds. Are there any questions of the sponsor of the motion? In discussion, let's move to the discussion phase. I have known Dr. Harper for a long time. He's bright. You know, we looked, at least I did, at folks from all over the state, well-regarded, well-respected, would probably like to charge more than what Dr. Harper is charging. But the strong advantage that Dr. Harper has is he understands Northwest Florida, number one, our needs, where we're trying to go. He helped author the fine legislation that Senator Gates put together back in 2012. Was it 12 or 13?
I guess.
Whatever.
Yeah, 11 and then 13.
11 and 12. Whatever.
Don't forget Speaker Weatherford.
Yeah. So he understands it, he gets it, and I think he is the perfect person personally for this job. And I'm going to make sure that Dr. Dana sort of chimes in, because just reminding the audience, Dr. Dana ran OTED for 8 years, which fundamentally does things much like what we're doing right now, and I greatly value her thoughts and opinions. And Dr. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm pleased that we were able to get Dr. Harper to join the team, and I thank President Gates and Scott Remington for their work to negotiate the successful outcome, bringing him aboard. Rick, when I was with Governor Bush as the head of Tourism, Trade, and Economic Development for the state, Dr. Harper was asked to be on the governor's Council of Economic Advisors, and he did a phenomenal job, and he did a great job working for Senator Gates and the entire Senate to advise on economic matters. He is truly a champion for Northwest Florida, and I think we're very lucky to have him. And in closing, even before today, when we reach out to him, when I've reached out to him on just ideas about program administration teaming or how the process should flow, he's been super responsive and just has very good input. So I'm pleased.
Good. I'm glad to hear those comments from you, Dr. Dana. I respect you and your knowledge of this field. Any other discussion or comments by members? Bob Benezzi, do you have any comments?
I don't. Dr. Harper, there are some issues with the contract.
About those?
Well, how much of the year do we get from Dr. Harper?
How much of the year do we get from him? We get 50%. According to the proposed contract, we get 50% of his work effort.
Is
that? Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate your comments. I think at this point we probably, hearing no further discussion, I think it's time to call a vote on the approval of the contract between Triumph Gulf Coast and Dr. Harper. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None. The motion passes. And I will tell you, it took us a while took Senator Gates a while and Dr. Dana a while to get this done. UWF didn't want to let him go, and at least halftime. So it took a few extra weeks than we thought it would. But and we had mentioned, I think, at one of our first meetings that we would like to be able to cut a check by year end to an entity or to a municipality or whatever for a good project that would generate jobs. We're not going to be able to do that. Why? Because it's taken a bit longer to put the puzzle together. That's not easy. That's number one. Number two, I want to do it right. We've waited decades to have a big giant pot of money to try and transform our economy in Northwest Florida. So it takes an extra month or two. I can hang in there with that. I would much rather be deliberate, take our time, and do it right. So sorry, but I will tell you, having Dr. Harper at the helm with respect to being our economic advisor and Senator Gates being chairman of Triumph Gulf Coast next year, we're in great hands. I mean, we are in great hands. Having said that, I'm going to have Pam Dana give us an update on the program administration selection process, or would that be Senator Gates?
No, I'd like to yield to Dr. Dana, please.
You're recognized, Dr. Dana.
Thank you, Chairman. We've had some very impressive contact with potential candidates for the position of program administrator, and while we are not going to put forth a name or names at this meeting, I want to assure those on this committee or on this board that we've got some very promising interest, and that are at a level that will complement very well our economic advisor that was just selected. However, in the interest of timing and the nature of this board, it's somewhat complicated for us to wait until a board meeting in order to bring names forward. We cannot communicate outside of the sunshine. So I wonder if we might have some discussion on whether it makes sense to delegate the authority to the chair to review these potential candidates and make an offer to the most value-added individual in between the time we meet today and the next time we meet.
In January. Hopefully
in January.
In January. Members who want... Mr. Connolly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I was going to ask about timing. That was of concern to me, too. I, for one, would not mind having a called meeting between now and then for us as a board to approve, to keep it expeditious. So I can understand the desire to just designate to the chair, and if we get there, that's fine, too. But I'm certainly willing for us to get on the phone and approve it together as we have the economic advisor today between now and then.
Yeah, my comments, not to shirk the responsibility, but it is to ensure that we are timely about having a full team in place.
Jason, your thoughts?
Got to find the right one. Like Mr. Connolly's idea, I think that so far we've all put our heads together and reviewed every applicant and come up with some good decisions and good selections so far. I don't see any reason why we couldn't get back together one more time. Chair has.
And I think we can do this by conference call.
That would serve the same ends with my concern. I just would ask that all of our board members make that time to get on a conference call on short notice. You know, we know that folks are really busy. And
I think we can do that. And I think that's a prudent thing for us to do. But let's do it before year end. And here, my suggestion would be, based upon input from members, is that you continue to vet potential program administrators. At some point in time, you might make a recommendation through Susan Skelton to me. I don't know how we do that, but I'm happy to look at them. And then once I feel that there's a good qualified person, I think we should call a special board meeting by telephone of the Tramp Gulf Coast Board. Is that acceptable to everyone? Before year end, I think it's very important that we do it. If we do it next week, it's even better. Because I'm sure wherever that person is now would need to give some notice to their current employer or clients or whatever. So I would entertain a motion that we have a conference call board meeting prior to year end to approve a program administrator. Mr. Connolly moves. Is there a second?
Yes, sir.
There's a second by Senator Gates. Questions, discussion. I think on that call we can talk about salary, et cetera. There's a motion, the second. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Based upon your previous motion, or previous action, Dr. Harper comes on board on the 20th of December, which is when he retires from the University of West Florida. And based on the work of your subcommittee, it was determined that that Dr. Harper would work with our executive director in overseeing and managing the process and the work of program administrators. So all I would say is that in order to get any input formally from Dr. Harper, to have him join our conversation, if you'd like him to, that would have to be post the 20th of December, because until then he's still employed by the university, and we're trying very hard to make sure that since the university is likely to be an applicant for funds, that there's absolutely no overlap at that time. So all I'm saying is that it's likely if we want Dr. Harper, if we want his head in the huddle on this, and if we want him on the call, we may have to do it after the 20th, sir.
Pam, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Dr. Harper, I have reached out to Dr. Harper on these promising candidates, and he has weighed in very, he's provided comforting weigh-in on it. So while I completely agree with him not being able to formally interact on this issue until after the December 20th, he's been intimately engaged, as has Susan, in reviewing potential applicants.
I think he would probably have a lot to say even now. Remember, the 20th is 12 days away. 12 days away? 12 days away. Today's the 8th. So it's a week and a half. I think at night he can look at some of these applicants, you know, or whatever. So, and I anticipated that we'll have a phone call probably sometime between during the week, immediately after Christmas and before the first of the year, thinking something like the 25th, 26th of December, something like that, Tuesday, Wednesday. That gives us roughly 3 weeks to work it out, 2.5 weeks. Is it okay? And maybe if on the 20th he says, I like this person, Pam likes that person, maybe we would make that phone call before Christmas. Went okay with that?
Yes, sir.
I think it's essential we have our bones, you know, the backbone of this group in place before 12/31. Now there's a motion and a second, and we're in the question phase. Any more questions? Or debate? Are there objections to the motion? Seeing none, show the motion passes. Before we move on to the next issue, I want to say that I see all five county commissioners from Bay County here today. Y'all stand up. I am impressed. And you hadn't gotten in a fist fight yet? That's even better, man. I'm playing. Yeah. thank y'all for coming, and thank all of y'all for allowing us to use your beautiful chambers. And feel free to participate as we move forward. Let's move on now to the applications committee. And let's have an update on pre-applications and applications filed to date. Dr. Dana, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to turn it over to Susan in a moment just to touch upon anything that I don't. But since we opened up the period for the first round of pre-applications, we've received 118 request awards that total over $1 billion. In fact, $1.025 billion. I don't even want to read this out, but it's over $1 billion. And we have one application that has come in since that deadline. Actually, we have four additional pre-applications came in after the closing of the phase one. So there's, in fact, 122. Susan, do you want to speak to any of the pre-app or applications?
Recognize?
The only thing that I would add is that the pre-applications are in and people will receive notification back on the pre-applications once the program administration and economic advisor team is in place. So no one needs to panic. The pre-applications are logged in. They're available for viewing on the website, but you don't need to do anything until you hear back from the review panel about whether or not to go forward with the full application. And that's just sort of where we are at the moment. We're sort of in a pause waiting to get the team together so they can begin the process of notification. And that won't occur until the end of the month at the earliest.
Yeah, thank you, Susan, for making that point. Susan's been a one-man team over at her shop, but it'll make all the difference in the world once we have the economic advisor and program administrator in place. I do want to bring up that I've heard mention that our application, the online application, is somewhat onerous, that in filling it out, that sometimes it does strange things, sometimes when people are trying to fill out in these boxes, I haven't done it yet, but that it's not loading properly. And so Susan and I have discussed a possible, like a secondary application process that maybe is a Word format. So in the event that the online is just not working on somebody's computer, that they're not in a complicated situation of not being able to file properly. Have you heard that? You've heard it. We've talked about it.
We have had people contact us and ask if they can turn their applications in, not the pre-app, but the applications in Word format, because the online application is apparently not letting them fill out the form in the way they need to. And we have told people, as long as a Word document exactly mirrors the PDF form that they're on the website, that would be okay until we can work out the technical issues. So in the first round of applications, we would be willing to accept those in Word format. Back to work with the tech team to work through the issues that people have experienced when they're filling out the full application, not the pre-application, but the full application.
So when you say exactly the same format, you would be saying, you're saying the exact question leading the answer, and then in the exact sequence.
Yes.
Okay.
And make
actually answer the questions that are on the application. Otherwise, it's not.
Susan, fix it.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Any comments, folks, on the Jason, you're recognized?
Thought it might be a good idea if we could give the counties, I know I've had a lot of questions about the deadline, and it was my understanding that we're going to have a rolling deadline instead of have it in by this time or else. And if I think that we all are on the same page, but perhaps it would be good to thoughts with the county commissions and everyone else for the record on how that exactly is going to work, and if they didn't make it by that one deadline, that they can still submit and be considered and whatnot.
Archer Dana, why don't you address that question, that comment?
I was actually going to turn it over to Scott because he was the initial, he was the one who suggested the quarterly or phased approach.
Counselor, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The pre-application deadline was sort of, I think, set by the board principally to try to make sure that generate some interest and see what kind of projects were out there and try to get the process moving as quickly as we could. I think everybody was pleased with the number of pre-applications that we've received. Frankly, at this point, we have the pre-applications. We just don't have the administrative team in place to look at them. So we certainly, right now, there is no other consideration deadline. We could set another deadline, the board, if it chose to try to encourage people to get pre-applications in. There's no application deadline at this point. So even before the pre-applications are considered, we can receive full applications if people want to get started on that. However, we also, in the last meeting, I believe, revised your bylaws so that you can consider applications and pre-applications by supermajority vote out of deadline, you know, without waiting on a deadline or any time that you think that this accept pre-applications. And so we would encourage every county or every eligible applicant to continue to submit pre-apps. There may be a consideration deadline set in the future, but I would suppose, and again, this is a board decision, that we would probably wait for the administrative team to get online and tell us how quickly they can get through these pre-apps before we set another deadline.
Okay. perhaps at our next board meeting in January, we can talk about this further, if that's okay. Good point, though, Jason. Good catch. I do anticipate with our program administrator on board, that whenever the first working day of the year is in January, whether it be January the 2nd or 3rd, something like that, we start culling through these pre-applications. I mean, these folks begin culling through them, and we're going to begin saying this one doesn't quite make it, that one doesn't quite make it. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in our meeting today, the scope. But for now, let's just leave it at that. We also, I'm going to recognize Susan Skelton to talk about the semi-annual report to the governor and the legislature as required per the statutes. Fire away. You're recognized.
Yes, sir. And to that last point, once we have the team in place and have the workload established, it'll be easier for us to know when we need to set another administrative cutoff as they go through, because we'll know better what workload is required on each of the applications and pre-applications. Statute requires a semi-annual report to the governor and legislature, and the Clark Partington team and I have been working together to draft the letter that you see in your packet to the governor, the president of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House, which is an update report on the activities of Triumph since the June 30th letter that was sent to the same entities as required by statute. And basically it just reports on the activities of the formation of the corporation and the application process, how many pre-applications have been turned in. And we will attach at the moment in time when the letter actually is sent to the attach a copy of the pre-applications and applications that have been a list that have been received to date as per the statute. And so that letter is before you, and I would ask for a motion to approve the report and authorize staff to deliver the letter to the governor and cabinet in a timely fashion.
Are there any questions of Susan? Mr. Connolly, you recognize.
Question and probably a comment. Some thought given to copying the delegation members from the 8 counties so they too have the information ahead of their chamber leaders getting them.
Yes, sir. At your direction, we will certainly do that.
Have that done. Is there a motion to approve the letter?
So moved.
Dr. Dana moves. Is there a second? Conley seconds the motion. Are there any questions? Sponsor of the motion. Is there discussion? Are there objections to the motion? Seeing none, show the motion passes. Susan, give us an update on the computer system.
Chairman, we are in process with the computer development. We are still making sure that each of you has been able to successfully sign on to your new email accounts. Once we've done that, we will... I see you, Mr. Chairman.
But, me too, boss.
me three. But we're working to get that done, and once we have that done, then they'll be able to move on to the next phase, which will involve the voicemail capture and all of those other issues that we have to resolve relative to the Sunshine Law. And this will provide us with a secure cabinet, if you will,
right,
of computer activity for the Triumph Board process, and all is on course for that.
Okay. Any questions, members? Office space and administrative issues. Susan, you're recognized.
We have been looking, as you know, for an office solution, and we haven't, you know, known what our needs were going to be, and we're still sort of in flux as to how much office space we might need. And in having conversation with Vice Chairman Gates, we came to a solution that may be an elegant solution, which is to consider renting office space at a fair rate from the Clark Partington law firm in Destin. And the option would be for one secured office that could be locked, and we could keep files and have a safe place for those files there, and the use of a conference room if needed. And the that amount, we would be talking for $1,000 a month, And if we needed to scale up to a larger facility, that option could be arranged at a different location, and we could scale up to two offices. And if for some reason the business relationship changes or that solution doesn't work, we would not have any kind of a time where we'd have to give extended notice to the
Happy to comment. We, under our agreement with Triumph Gulf Coast, the board is welcome to use our offices for coffee and conference rooms at any time at no charge. The issue came up if Triumph would like a dedicated office inside of our facilities. The bar requires us to have a written lease agreement with someone to make sure that our files are secure and yours are secure. And so this was offered simply as an option solution. Again, I'm not promoting it, but if we can help the board in that way, we're happy to.
If I can comment, irony of ironies, yesterday I was in a mediation, a 13-hour mediation, in your offices over in Destin. So I toured the I think there's a couple offices that might be available, and a conference room and a kitchen, too, with nice food in it. But it's in an existing office arena, so to speak. If we go out and either build out office space, or if we go out and rent vacant office space, we've got to buy furniture. We have a lot of expenditures that we'll have. We probably also would need some kind of a receptionist at that point in time. This option, by moving into an office building like this, there's already a receptionist out front. So if someone, and we need to have a presence, we have to, I think everyone here agrees, we need to have a presence. While I understand it's a mobile world now and people can work out of their homes, we need to have a real home that we can send folks to. Rather than have to purchase office equipment, which is not cheap, hire a receptionist. It's very expensive for what, $1,000 a month we can have an office or two. With all the issues we talked about, it's not elaborate office space, but it's fine. It's professional. If a corporation came in from out of town and wanted to chat with our folks, they would be not knocked over by the elegance, but it's very professional. Just what, in my opinion, we need. And we get in basically for nothing and can get out in a month. I like the space, but I'm certainly willing to listen to what members have to say. Gates?
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. One of the concerns that we've had is to avoid any apparent conflict of interest or apparent bias. And certainly we could approach everyone who's in local government. We could approach educational institutions and ask if we could get office space there. Susan did a little check for me. I seem to remember that, and you would remember better than I, Mr. Speaker, that legislators are able to use office space in government buildings without paying rent. Notwithstanding the fact that legislators appropriate to local government and educational institutions. And we thought about that, and my input simply was that it creates an optics problem if you get free office space from the university of this or the college of that or the local government of something else, and they become applicants for funding. No matter how you explain it, people may say, well, you know, their office there, and they hang out with them, they're cheek by jowl, they drink out of the same coffee urn. Well, of course they got the money and we didn't. So when the possibility arose of being able to get very inexpensive and useful office space at Clark Partington, where we already have a relationship and there's clearly no conflict, it seemed attractive to me. So I'm prepared to support the executive director's recommendation.
Members, Bob Benezzi, what are your thoughts?
Well, that
$1,000 a month. Month to month.
That's good.
It's at Destin Commons, which everyone here knows where the big Bass Pro Shop is. It's right there. It's right behind it. Each office is roughly 10 by 15, plus a conference room that would be available. And, you know, how do you value the kitchen area, the common kitchen area? I don't know. But I don't think we're going to do much better than that. We can look around and spend time, but it's right smack in the middle of the district.
Great idea, our Lord.
Dan, any thoughts?
My only question would be to Susan, and it'd be to Rick too, but after the 20th of December, would that require your relocation into the Destin area, or would it just be a periodic checking in at that office?
No, that would just be the location where we would be housed, and we could keep our files there, and it would be a centralized location. And as often as I'm out here anyway, it's not an imposition at all to me to have the office there. And as Chair Bentz noted, there is a receptionist that can receive packages or that type of thing for us there. So location-wise, it is centrally located. It's centrally located to Dr. Harper. He can keep files there if he needs to. Files there, and a program administrator would all be able to work out of the space, but we would not, you know, need to have someone there physically all the time. As you know, we've been operating for the last 2.5 years completely.
Thank you.
Any more discussion? Any more questions? Is there a motion to approve that? Is there a motion for Senator Gates to enter into a agreement for office space that we just talked about under the terms we just talked about? If you don't mind me delegating that to you, Senator Gates, with Susan Skelton, the two of you.
I think, Mr. Chairman, that you would need to execute the documents.
I would.
But, of course, yes, sir.
Actually, Susan Skelton and I can do it.
Yes, sir.
How about if I would entertain a motion that myself and Susan Skelton enter into a contract to lease the aforesaid space we just talked about?
Move it.
Is
second.
There a second? There's a second. Any questions? Any debate? Any objections? Seeing none, show the motion passes. Any other administrative issues, Ms. Gelton? Okay, let's move on to the legal report. Scott Remington, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before each one of you is a copy of the book, The New Geography of Jobs by Enrico Moretti. That is a required reading from your economic advisor who asked me to deliver those today.
Good.
So just so you know, that was Dr. Harper's suggestion for your holiday reading list. As to an update on our administrative activities, we still have an open question with reimbursement or payment of pre-incorporation fees and costs. We've asked for an opinion from the Attorney General's office, and we're awaiting that reply. So as soon as that answer comes back, we'll be able to resolve that issue. Have bound directors and officers liability insurance, and I believe we're picking up a check for the full premium today. So we were able to accomplish that in the last month. And before you in your packet is a formal conflict of interest policy that we'd ask for the board to review and approve today. You already have a conflict of interest policy. It's written into the statute. However, for us to apply for tax-exempt status, the IRS requires us to have a separate conflict of interest policy for not-for-profits. So what we have done is we have distilled the statutory language that makes up your conflict of interest policy and put that into a document, and that's the document before you. Everything in the document comes out of the statute word for word, except for Articles 5, 6, and 7. And those are provisions that the IRS likes to see in not-for-profit conflict of interest policies. And they're generic provisions. It will require annually for the board to acknowledge that they've received and understand a copy of the policy. There will be periodic reviews done to make sure that the board is carrying out its charitable purpose, and it authorizes the use of outside experts in reviewing a fairly standard policy. And as I said, it exists already in law. This is just a formality for the IRS.
Members, you've had a chance to review the, or have they, have, was that sent out ahead of time? Okay, good. You've reviewed it. Is there a motion to approve the conflict of interest policy so we can get our tax exempt number? Is there a motion?
Move it.
Motion and a second. Any questions? Any discussion? Dr. Dana? Any objections? Seeing none, show the motion passes. Okay. Scott, we're done with you.
I have a question, Scott, on this item. When is the appropriate time to file that you have a conflict of interest on an application? Would that be at pre-application point or at application point?
I believe that would come in at the application point before, but it could come in at the pre-application if you were asked or begin to review an application that you think you have a conflict on. Then you would have an obligation to file a written notice that you have a conflict and you'll be abstaining from. But it arises when you become aware that there could be a conflict.
Okay. Thank you.
I am going to be. In terms of, I'm going to err on the side of I'd rather report it than
absolutely.
Early on. Okay. Bob Benezzi, have I ignored you enough, or are you still around? Okay, thanks. Steve Riggs, you're recognized for the Treasurer's Report.
Chairman. Now for the fun part, accounting. If you could, there is in front of you, as a blue header from Tipton Marler, I'd like to thank David and Jennifer. They are very much on top of things. Have given us good guidance and have kept very detailed, accurate records in a very timely manner. But I'll just go over a couple things briefly with you. On page 2 is our statement of financial position. And again, our assets comprise primarily of our Florida Prime account and our checking account. So we have a little over $300 million. Just below that, you'll see in our liabilities section, interest payable to the trust. This is the funds that we transfer on a monthly basis to the DEO. So that transfer was made this week. In addition, I did, you'll see our checking account was down to $75,000. I did transfer some additional funds into our checking account to pay our normal monthly expenses. On page 3 is our statement of activity. Again, if you'll just look in the November column, you're going to see that the majority of our expenses are made up of our normal monthly reoccurring expenditures for accounting and payroll and legal services. There's no real surprises there. As time goes on, we will start to have additional expenditures, but in the current month, it looks very much like last month.
I assume accounting and auditing are high because of initial setup?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And Tipton Marler spent a significant amount of time, again, getting set up, getting used to the process, and everything else. But their hours incurred are what I would consider reasonable given what they've been tasked right. with in the beginning.
And same thing with legal. That's probably, well, it's $8,300, not too bad.
And again, that's according to our contract.
Right.
Any questions on our financial statements?
Mr. Chairman? You're recognized.
I'm Thank sorry, you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question, Stephen, having to do with whether or not we need a reserve for an obligation that we believe we have. Previously, this board discussed and acknowledged that we have an obligation to Susan Skelton and an obligation to a law firm that we received services from before cash was transferred to our account. We've been, as Mr. Remington has indicated, making sure that we plate up our action in resolving those obligations with all the approvals that we possibly can get, including an opinion, if we can get it, from the Attorney General. My question, Stephen, is do we need to have some sort of reserve for this obligation as we go forward, or is that something that we would just expense when it happens?
At this point, because we do not know the dollar amount, it gets a little hard to estimate. So that, coupled with the fact that it is not going to be, I'm going to use the word material number, to our overall financial statements, I would probably ask the board to consider to wait to book a liability until we get some further clarification on, A, whether we can move forward, and B, the dollar amount.
Mr. Chairman?
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up, our fiscal year ends December 31. And obviously, as Speaker Benz has indicated, we want an absolutely squeaky clean relationship with the Auditor General. Is there any problem in not having a reserve for this obligation, or at least some kind of a note in our year-end financials that we recognize that we will have these payments because of prior obligations incurred? You're the CPA, not me. I'm just sensitive to making sure that we don't raise a new issue in the new fiscal year without some kind of proper predicate for it.
Yeah, what I would estimate would happen is we would find out within the next 30 days. Would that be fair?
You can't ever tell. I hope so, but
okay. Well, let's just say we get our audit done by March 31st. We can always go back and make an accounting entry to go put this liability on the books. So there's not going to be a problem with AG. And again, if in the next month, 2 months, 3 months, we determine that there is this liability that does exist, we will make an entry to go ahead and accrue and record that as of December 31st. So it will be incumbent upon us to make the recommendation for the entry. We will do that prior to the conclusion of the audit. We will do that in conjunction with discussing with our auditor that there is this potential liability, so there will not be a finding on their behalf if we end up having to make an entry.
Thank you very much, Mr. Riggs. And Mr. Chairman, I agree with you that we have an obligation, and I just want to make sure we fulfill it, that there becomes no technical reason why we can't.
Good catch, Senator. It was a good catch. Good look at that. I see our CPA, David Tipton, kind of nodding his head in agreement with Steve Riggs. Okay. Okay. Keep going. Susan. Yeah, we need a motion to approve this financial statement. Is there a motion? There's a motion by Stan, second by Senator Gates. Any questions of the sponsor? Any discussion? Any objections to the motion? Show the motion passes. Now we move on, Steve, to a proposed operating budget. You're recognized.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your packet, you will see a proposed operating budget. Again, this is a preliminary budget that we've kind of gone through, and for each item that we took our actual year to date or our contractual allowance. So for things such as accounting or legal fees or Dr. Harper, we were able to come up with good, hard numbers in order to budget for. Again, there were certain other items where we had to make an educated guess on what those expenditures may be, such as grant evaluation costs. So we budgeted $100,000. I believe that this is a good budget to start off of for the year. I will tell you, moving forward, Nothing precludes us from amending the budget as actual costs come in. So what I would anticipate would happen is, again, as we move further down the road and we get our grant evaluation cost estimate in, I would anticipate me bringing this budget back in front of the board, asking to amend the budget to better reflect our actual anticipated expenditures. And again, we went out 4 years. We wanted to kind of give you an idea of our initial administration allocation revenue. And then, again, as we start to get our additional tranches of money starting in 2019, we're gonna get some additional administration allocation revenue for that. So if there are any questions the board has on specific items, you know, I can go over those. And then, again, once we get some of the other numbers, a better estimate, you know, we'll fill out an additional description for each line item so that the board can evaluate those additional line items and understand exactly, you know, why we estimate those costs at certain amounts.
Okay. Members, have you had a chance to review this operating budget? I've looked at it. I think it's reasonable. Is there a motion to approve the operating budget? Dana moves. Is there a second?
Second.
And Senator Gates seconds. Any questions on the motion? Any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Speaker.
Recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To me, I appreciate Mr. Riggs doing the work that he did with our executive director. I'm prepared to support the motion. I would like to comment just for the record that a significant fact for me is that our proposed budget is substantially less than the legislature's direction as to how much ought to be spent for overhead. I don't think there's probably any organization that deals with the kind of funding that we're dealing with that operates on the lean budget that is being proposed by Mr. Riggs, and I want to thank him for that and thank Ms. Skelton for operating this organization off of our dining room table, and Speaker Benz from, you know, handling it in almost a virtual sense for the last 2.5 years. But as we go forward with staff and an office, albeit a very modest one, we're talking about spending substantially less than the amount that the legislature allocated for this purpose.
Good comments. Thank you, Bob. We're in the discussion phase. Any more discussion on the motion? Are there objections to the motion? Seeing none, show the motion passes. Briggs, keep going. You're on a roll.
All right. Also in your packet, you'll have a document for Triumph Gulf Coast systems documentation. We were able to put together some sort of policies and procedures associated with the accounting function. Again, this is going to help us with the AG. It's going to help us with our audit, and it gives us a starting point on what our policies and procedures are to ensure that we meet those. So I believe everyone has had a chance to review these, but we tried to hit every major item in terms of financial accountability. And there are limits on what we can and cannot do. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to you to see if there are any additional questions or comments on these policies and procedures.
Members? Any issues? Any problems? Mr. Riggs's proposal? Is there a motion to approve? Gates moves. Mr. Connolly seconds. Are there questions? Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, show the motion passes. You batted 1,000 a day, Steve.
All right.
That's pretty good.
The last item I have for you is our nonprofit corporation application status. That is 99% complete. We are waiting on to approve the conflict of interest policy, so that will be included in our packet, and we will send that to the IRS for our IRS determination status. Given my past history with these applications, I do not perceive there to be any issues or problems getting approved. So that is just, you know, a quick update on that status. So this is happening right now. We'll get sent out next week. Do not anticipate any issues.
Good. Any questions? 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 2 months?
Six.
Okay. All right.
They're too busy collecting our money to approve the application.
Okay. Let's move on now to board discussion. And we have, Senator Gates sent me an email or a memorandum talking about initial thoughts and filters for project consideration. We're moving forward now. We have our advisor, we'll have a program administrator. I would anticipate that probably, because of the number of applicants we have, we'll probably have to bring another person in, not a major person, but someone who can help go through these applications. So beginning in January, we're going to begin sifting through these and approving or not approving at some point in time these pre-applications so folks can move on to the next level. And Senator Gates has put forth some thoughts on parameters. You may call them guardrails, whatever. And I think now is probably an appropriate time for board members to talk about. We have applications that range from A to Z in terms of their scope. And probably it's time for us to give a little direction on what each of us think, what applications they really like and what applications they don't like or we don't like. So having said that, without being specific, I think it's probably time for us to give some more specific generalities. That's an oxymoron, I guess. But Senator Gates, why don't you elaborate a little bit on your initial thoughts? And everyone be prepared to talk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have wide latitude based on the enabling statute and also based on prior board discussions. And as organizations and local governments have had informal conversations with me, had a conversation last night with a leader in Walton County who asked a series of 17 questions that he had written down, but it kind of all came down to, what are you guys really interested in? Right. And we each may have our own points of view. I only put together a memo to the chairman just kind of as a straw man or a heart starter to provoke discussion. And it seems to me that at least for me, I have to take all of the potential criteria, all of the wide latitude that is given in the statute and our prior conversations, down to some kind of filters that I would look at an application and say, well, what are the key issues that I'm looking at before I would vote? And I just provided that to the chairman and to the rest of the board, and it's up on our website. And I'll just run them very quickly, Mr. Chairman. The first is Triumph being asked to substitute our funds for appropriations that ought to be made by the legislature or expenditures that ought to be made by the county commission or a school board or the board of a community college? Or are we being asked to supplement, to provide help that otherwise wouldn't be available or couldn't be available? To me, that's a key issue. I don't want to stand in the way of or try to become a little school board or a little legislature and do the job that other people should be doing and would want to do. I don't want to step on the toes of decision makers who, by statute, are empowered and obligated to fund certain areas of government activities. And then secondly, you know, I've always believed that that if somebody comes and asks me to invest, that I feel a little more interested if they say, well, my money's in, and I want to talk to you about your money, as opposed to saying, this is a great idea if you fund it, but it's not a good enough idea for me to be at risk. So a second filter I will look at is, are we being asked to be a partner with matching funds, or are we being asked to shoulder a majority or all of the funding obligation? And I think there's been some conversation on the board that we're looking for 50-50 partners. And so that's a second filter for me. Are we a partner, or are we a cash cow? And then third, and these are not listed in priority order, just as they rolled out of my own disorganized mind, what kind of jobs are we talking about? Are these good jobs? What kind of economic value is created by these jobs? And are they sustainable over 10 years? I think the speaker has mentioned a couple of times that, and he certainly knows about it from his own corporations, you got construction jobs that come and are very important to the people who have them, very important to the community, but when the bridge is built, the jobs are over, and now you got, you know, one guy tending the bridge. So you've really created one sustaining job. So my question is, what kind of jobs are these? Are they good jobs, and are they jobs that will last? And what's the cost per job? In the $30 million that was appropriated by the legislature for the Oil Spill Recovery Act, the $30 million that sort of primed the pump for this $1.5 billion that we're dealing with now, about 7,000 jobs were created with $30 million, which is an awfully good cost per job compared to other cost per jobs that economic development organizations have scored in the past. So I'm interested in what kind of jobs, how long are those jobs going to be involved, be in our economy, and what's our cost per job in creating them, and then next, long-term viability. Is this a project that we're being asked to help get started, and is it sustainable based upon its own business plan? In other words, is there a point in time when the lines cross, when we've made the investment and now we have something that's economically viable and is generating economic value for our area, or is this something that will always have to be supported by somebody, by government or by somebody else? So I guess to put it bluntly, if it's a proposal, Mr. Speaker, that says we want you to give us money to get it started, and it'll never quite make it, but we hope to get some money from the county commission, and we got plans to get an appropriation from the legislature, and that's how we're going to make this thing work in the out years, I'm going to be more skeptical as one member of the board. And then an interest that comes right out of statute is the proposal, a proposal that allows us to broaden our economic base in Northwest Florida, or are we doubling down on what we have now? Nothing wrong with what we have now. We want more of it. But the statute says that one of our objectives and one of our results is supposed to be economic diversification. So can we look beyond what we're doing at what we might do and what we should do? And we certainly have had plenty of input from organizations in the area who've told us about the industries that we ought to be or could be using to diversify our economy, and I think this is where Dr. Harper is going to be of tremendous value. I guess, again, to put it bluntly, my hope is that this $1.5 billion can be used to create an economy where we have more control over our own destiny and our destiny is not entirely controlled by what happens in the Gulf of Mexico, man-made or naturally, and, you know, who in the Pentagon gets the sniffles about Northwest Florida and wanting to move a base or a mission somewhere else. My hope is that we'll be able to have some diversification of our economy, so I'll look at a proposal and say, is it broadening our economy, or are we just doubling down? And then finally, and this is something that Speaker Benz and I talked about long before I got on the board back in the days when we could talk about it, I want my grandchildren to be able to compete for good jobs in Northwest Florida. And I want them to someday look back and say, you know, Granddad was kind of a strange character, but one thing he did do is he was on...
I agree with y'all now.
On that. I know, Speaker. But one thing he did do, he was on some kind of a board that made sure that there was a little bit of help for the right kind of economic development so that we can compete for jobs and stay in Northwest Florida. And so my question will be, is a project that's being proposed in the public interest benefiting the future of Northwest Florida, or does it inure primarily to somebody's private interest? I'm not against private interest. I love private interest. You know, I think it's a shrine, you know, for you know, the way we do business as a capitalist society. But I want to make sure that there's a public interest served. So these are just initial thoughts of mine. They certainly are not divinely inspired. But my feeling is we've got to have some filters to determine how we will approach the approval of projects, how we will direct our very small team as they rack and stack these projects. And I think we owe potential applicants an idea of what's important to us. And everybody may have better ideas than I do, but those are the filters at this moment. Certainly wait to be informed by your thinking, but these are the filters that matter to me right now as I look at potential applications. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Senator Gates. And members, that those are words from the person who had the idea and concept to take 75% of whatever received from the lawsuit for economic damages and put it in the eight counties that were heavily affected by the oil spill. And also within that language of the bill he passed talked about what he just talked about. I mean, it said economic diversification, bottom line. Yeah, I could be wrong. Transformational. I really would like to see that occur. But having said that, and I'll talk more later, who wants to go next to talk about your thoughts on how these dollars should be spent? Well, Steve, you're recognized.
No, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don, I appreciate you memorializing this for us because I think, you know, as I've talked to various people and groups and some of them that may be in the room, I feel like this captures the vast majority of what I had conversations with them about. And one thing that I do want to highlight is the long-term viability. I think this is a very important key component for me personally getting something approved. Without going into a great long story, I did work for a not-for-profit that essentially won the lottery during the ramp up in the real estate, and they got a piece of real estate and they sold it for $30 million. And they had this great idea of building all these facilities across Northwest Florida. And so they took their $30 million and blew it all and built really great facilities. And while this was starting to go on, I raised the question, okay, what are we going to do to sustain these facilities? So this organization built this great infrastructure but had no long-term plan on the long-term viability. And this not-for-profit is now in financial trouble. So you have a bunch of nice buildings that are now not being funded and be able to be closed down. I do not want to spend our money and waste our money on something that is not going to have long-term viability. That's just one thing that I have preached to anyone who has come to talk to me. But again, these other items that you've listed here are greatly on point. And I think as I start to talk to additional groups, I think I'm going to just give them a copy of this. and say, you know, let's go down these items and talk about how your project fits in with these items here. So thank you very much for doing that.
Bob and Izzy, your thoughts.
Well, first of all, Don, thanks for all the hard work. A really good job on these thoughts and filters. I disagree on one major premise here, since I've been following this along here, and that is the transformational thing. I agree with that. We should try to, you know, find new businesses, and you've heard me speak about this again. Everybody wants this. I think that, first of all, everybody should shore up the businesses that are strongest in their county. Maybe Franklin County. Whoever thought that Apalachicola oysters would be worth a ton of money? Well, I didn't, and they are. And what can we do to make those beds, you know, last a long, long time and part of here that's in Panama City that needs to be expanded, fixed, you know, dredged. I don't know what it all is, but land over there. But these are the kind of things that have been in these counties for many, many years. First, if we can get those rock solid, you know, then I'd be hunting transformational businesses. But I'm not used to having a big, huge checking account to draw against and be silly. But I want to use the same principles that I would use in any business, whether we had $1 million in the bank or $100 million in the bank. So that would be the first idea that comes to me, is to lock down the businesses that are in these counties and make them as solid as possible, and then move on to the next thing. That's a thought of mine.
Fundamentally, what you're saying is let's make sure that we don't ignore the existing businesses that are in all these eight counties, and if they have a good idea, good plan, good concept, let's not ignore them. Great for us to take a look at new companies coming in, but I think what you're saying is let's not forget about those that are here already. Correct, Bob?
Yeah, and have made payroll here for 50 viable businesses, and they've employed a lot of people. Let's not forget that.
Okay. Stan Connolly, your thoughts?
Well, I too thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank Don for putting this out. It did get the heart stirred in my mind thinking as well, so thank you for that. Like the rest of you, I'm being questioned fairly regularly about where we're going, and even being asked to comment on some pre-applications, which I have resisted, other than to say that I think I align with a lot of this in the words I've been using. I think you've done well to really actually put it down for all of us to come back to and stay centered around. And really there's two of these that I generally lead with in my conversations. One of them is the jobs element. And certainly it'd be easy for us to walk away from this conversation, for our audience members and others to walk away from this conversation thinking the emphasis on jobs leads to the projects that have specific high numbers of jobs getting ranked the highest. That certainly is interesting to me, but I don't think every one of these projects is going to be a 2,000 job project. I think many of them, though, could create the right atmosphere and an ecosystem to create those kinds of jobs. And as a for instance, I've seen some workforce applications that point to multiple businesses that they support over the long term. To me, that's of equal interest to me as one project that brings 2,000 jobs. And so I think there's variations into the jobs emphasis, but I, for one, agree wholeheartedly. We need to be looking at those jobs. And I think we did well in our own priorities. I don't have the application here in front of me to make reference to some of those targeted industries and some of those targeted jobs that applicants can refer to. So that is a high priority for me. The second one I would say is the matching funds. And I've quoted you, Senator Gates, multiple times and how we want to lever this $1.5 billion up multiple times. Maybe not just 1-to-1. Maybe it's 3 or 4-to-1. And I have seen a number of applications that do have matching funds. I haven't had time to go through every single one of them and rank them, but mentally there's some that have a fair amount of match to them. And I'll add multiple contributors to that match, and I think that's an important priority that's a tangent to me on this. And there's some that don't have any match, at least referenced in the pre-application. They may become more evident as we see the full applications. But absolutely, I think that needs to be an emphasis here. And the tangent I'd just qualify, Mr. Chairman, would be I don't think the match has to come from one entity. I think it's possible it can come from multiple entities, which to me gets to this notion of regionalism. Some of these projects are going to have an impact broader than one city and one county. And where we can have multiple entities investing, and I know that's hard when it's not sitting in my city or my county, but multiple interests aligned to provide some of that match, I think it inures to probably greater success of it long term. But the match to me is going to be a huge priority. So I like these. I think they're completely in line with the priorities we put out in our application. I just think it kind of kicks it up a notch, if you will, to know where to start with so many applications coming in. So I thank you for that.
Okay. Jason, you're up.
Folks are a tough act to follow on public speaking. I tell you, it's every month that goes by, I learn more and more about what people want, what people are hoping for out of this Triumph Fund. And a transformational, sustainability, and generational are the big three things that I keep circling back to. And I have a passion for the rural counties, the smaller cities. And I guess I'm beginning to see that sometimes their needs are different than the larger cities. Things that they can hope to achieve are going to be different than things that the larger counties can hope to achieve. Coming back to one of the strongest things I feel for our rural areas is the educational infrastructure. Love the projects that I've learned about in McCullough and Franklin County, how they're going to potentially develop a cultural change towards a stronger workforce. Things that we normally probably wouldn't be able to try. And if done correctly through some of the pre-applications I've seen, I think that we could see a shift in technical and workforce training in some of the smaller counties that would allow them to be in position to jobs in the future. Coming back around to those items, those mean a lot. I think that they're home runs, personally. Hard to swing and miss when you're training kids job with a computer or with a pipe or even just teach them some skills that'll help them get a job down the road. Beyond that, I'll let you guys.
No, you're part of it. You're part of this team. So, and I think this is helpful, Dr. Dana.
I think every one of these points that Senator Gates has listed are absolutely relevant and important. And fortunately, we had them included in our discretionary priorities in the application itself. So this is not new ideas. It's just an emphasis of important ideas. I very much agree with Stan's comment that there will be projects that don't create massive amounts of jobs, maybe a handful of jobs, but it will be a very impactful project to the region. And so we need to hold that, keep that in mind. And then one thing that we've not mentioned today, but that in as much as possible, that the counties support the projects. And not that it's their number one priority, a project, but that the counties recognize the importance of that project to their community and to the region.
Okay, so I guess my turn. I each of us will be able to vote at some point in time on these applications. We will have even more specific guidelines from Rick Harper and ultimately our program administrator. They're going to be able to give us some hints, so to speak. But let me tell you what I like and what I don't like. I don't like boat ramps. I don't like, so those of you that have boat, that doesn't create, that's not what we're about, folks. That's not what we're about. And I'm exaggerating a little bit saying boat ramps or the like. Let me tell you something else I don't like is repairing leaky water lines in a community. That's not our responsibility. That is a city or county's responsibility. What I don't like is putting additional turn lanes or whatever at an intersection in downtown, whatever, Panama City, Crestview, Pensacola. I don't like that. Now, if in fact, from a public infrastructure perspective, there is a new industry coming in that might employ 100 people or 150 people, I think then we have an obligation. We have, I would support improving infrastructure to help bring that industry in. But we don't need to be supplanting dollars that should be spent either by the state or by a county or by a city. I agree with Bob Benezzi's thoughts about let's don't ignore what we already have here as well. I know we're trying to expand our economy. I get that. And that's going to be my number one priority along with Senator Gates. I think that's your number one, to expand. So we're not, as Don says, we're not, when the Pentagon sniffles, we get pneumonia. You know, when there's problems with our Gulf of Mexico, we're on our knees at that point in time. We do need to get beyond those two big things, those two big areas that that cause us concern from time to time. But I'm also not prepared, and I don't think Senator Gates is either, to ignore those folks and those industries that are here that might need some dollars to expand their facility and need infrastructure to that new facility. We are hamstrung to a certain extent by the statutes as they now read in terms of being able to attract and help new industry. But I think that we can work within those parameters, assuming we have a good, clever lawyer who can make sure that we get through the do it correctly. So my focus really is going to be on so much infrastructure. It'll be for infrastructure that helps us to diversify our economy. Then you've got my attention. So, and I could keep on going. The other issues that Senator Gates came up with, spot on. I mean, he's spot on. Partnering with city, county, state, federal, have to do it. If you think we're going to put up all the money, no. And someone asked me a question. What if, and I don't like to play what ifs, but what if, let's just take Highway 85 that leads from Niceville to Crestview. Isn't it 85?
Yes, sir.
Let's say the DOT says, we're going to 6-lane that highway or 8-lane that highway, but we're going to do it in 12 years. But you know what, Triumph? If you put up $2 million toward that $100 million cost, we may go ahead and do that project right now. Now, that's complicated. I mean, that's very tempting. It's very tempting to put some money toward that, and we're certainly getting the matching dollars from DOT, but to a certain extent, we are supplanting DOT dollars. So those are some of the tricky questions that we're going to, or applications we're going to look at. So I just want to emphasize my personal preference is for creating new jobs, preferably in economic development, manufacturing, aerospace, whatever. But I'm also not inclined to ignore those folks that are here as well. So having said that, I'm hoping that all of our comments, this is on the Florida Channel, so you'll be able to see a rerun of this, and your friends will as well. This is, you've just heard where we are on applications. We're going to probably work on narrowing that down as time goes on. So I think today was the first time you've probably heard from us where our thoughts are on issues. And having said that, members, do you all have any more thoughts? Or Senator Gates, you're the father of all this. Any more?
You're the reason we're here.
Well, no, sir. I had a partner. His name is Will Weatherford. The only other thing I would say is that we have an opportunity to be more than just passive participants who write checks. I had, a great conversation last night with a Walton County leader, a citizen in Walton County, and he had a lot of experience in government grants and government contracts, and our conversation led to the role that Triumph might take in deal-making. Imagine somebody comes to us with a very good idea, and imagine that through the efforts of our small team, we determine that that we can't do it all, and they can't do it all. Maybe there's a need for a federal partner. Infrastructure is an example. You know, there are, we've got two members of Congress who have stake in the counties that we're talking about. And both of them have indicated that they're interested in helping us to bring, you know, some federal assistance where they can. And, Speaker, you know better than I do that on federal transportation projects, the federal government looks for a partner, and their idea is they bring 90% of the money, the locals bring 10%, and they got a partner. So the question that I've asked our two members of Congress, Dr. Dunn and this other fellow, is this: What if we were able to come in with a, what if an applicant, a consortium of people, were able to come in with a infrastructure project, a transformational infrastructure project that made it possible for economic development to occur? What if we came in and said, look, we can come up between the state of Florida, partnership perhaps with the state DOT, and Triumph and local government, we could come up with 30% or 40% of the money for a project. Is there a way that we could therefore move up on the federal list of transportation projects? And the answer that I got, not just from our two congressmen, but from others who are placed pretty highly in that process in Washington, is that would be refreshing and maybe possible. So one of the things that I think we need to look for is the opportunity to be deal brokers, to look for ways to actively help bring partners together to make things possible. And we've got the intellectual firepower at this table to be able to do that, I think. So I would hope that we would not just be waiting for somebody to bring us a perfect solution that we could help fund, but that if necessary, we could help bring some other players to the table and encourage them to help make a feasible project into a project that really will work.
Great observation. Any more comments, members? Recognize Jason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How does the board feel about the analysis that Dr. Harper is going to do on these projects? We have asked the county commissions to weigh in on the projects, and I know some of them have tried to scramble to weigh in on the first round of pre-applications. Have enough time, didn't have enough information. How do you all feel about us making available Dr. Harper's analysis to the county commissions and allowing them to go back and look at projects that affect their county and reevaluate if they're going to support it or not based on that added information?
Let's give that some thought. Off the top of my head, I don't know. Let's give that some thought. Bob, do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, the first thing that happens when the counties hear that, unfortunately, and I don't mean to offend anybody at the meeting, is that, you know, fees start coming up and, you know, development fees, as you know, Alan, and, you know, will it be nice? Will it play nice? That's the big question I would have.
Members, any more observations? Stan?
So I think just bring this up at this time because I think it's a bridge we're going to need to cross at some point. And based on some of the applications I've read, I can see it coming sooner versus later. And that's the notion of multi-year commitments. I certainly think it is incumbent upon us to think long-term and think broadly. But I do think we need to take care in obligating this board and Triumph in general to multi-year disbursements. When we are not guaranteed the next disbursement. I know we've all said we want to work real hard to be sure we do this the right way with the first $300 million so we can ensure the remaining appropriations do come our way. But things can change, as we have been reminded multiple times. So I think we're going to have to be very cautious about multi-year commitments. That being said, there could be projects that come along that the matching is in multi-year phases. The jobs may be in multi-year phases. The infrastructure investment may be in multi-year phases. And I don't have an answer for this. I just raise it as something we need to be thinking about. Even thinking this first round of applications, we're going to be seeing the request for those. And will we be willing to obligate that from future appropriations? I think that's going to be tough. Or are we going to be willing to take within $300 million and set it aside to fulfill multi-year obligations? So I just raise that as something we need to be thinking about and preparing for as Dr. Harper and others bring us the rankings.
Observation. Any more? Anybody else?
Warren Allen, it's going to be a very interesting economy the next 4 years or 8 years versus what we've had the last 8 years. And I think a lot of people are still living in the past because it was such a dramatic change in the past administration, and I think that there's no telling what kind of business that will do, and it may be surprisingly good. We're at 4% unemployment right now. There's going to be a lot of things that change the landscape in the next 4 years, I believe.
Who knows? It's
changes your idea. Our workers. For a plant in Northwest Florida, it may be, and I've seen this before.
That's a good point. And to even further complicate the issue, he happened to mention automobile. You know, what if I'm making this up? What if Chevrolet GM decided they want to build a plant along Interstate 10, maybe in Marianna, maybe in Crestview. I mean, but it may not be within the eight counties is my whole point. Do we play? I don't know.
I mean,
we do. I mean, those are things that we've got to take a look at because many of those folks would be employed within the eight county area. So I don't know. I'm not committing by any stretch of the imagination, but Bob, you raise some good points. Right. Any more input?
I don't want to wear my welcome out, Mr. Chairman. Could I make one final comment?
Absolutely. Keep going. Make as many as you want.
Under the fourth point that I made in my memo on long-term economic viability, I raise a question which is important to me, and that is, does the project have measurable milestones and enforceable clawbacks? I do not believe in faith-based economic development, where you provide people with money and have faith that it'll all work out. I believe in show me the results. So my hope is that as we get applications in and as our team provides advice and counsel to people who may be potential applicants, that we speak to them in very candid terms about performance milestones that are very specific and that are measurable. If it's 50 jobs, okay, how many jobs in the first 6 months and how many jobs in the next year? And if those jobs show up, that's great. If they don't show up, I would expect counsel, and counsel has been you know, has agreed in our engagement with them that they will be helping us draw up performance contracts so that if people don't perform, we want clawbacks. And clawbacks mean we want our money back. So we may be looking for performance bonds. We may be looking for personal guarantees from people. We may be looking for a lot of ways to make sure that our money is has the most impact. No, not even Babe Ruth batted 1,000. In fact, I think he batted around a little less than 300 when he got it down to the specifics. So we don't expect everything to work. But we certainly don't want to be in the position of buying the sizzle and then discovering that there's no steak. So consequently, I'm going to certainly be looking as one member of this board for projects that include specific performance milestones that are measurable, progress payments so that people get paid as they produce, as opposed to getting a big check and hoping it all works out.
If I could just jump in also, does that work? Clawbacks have worked.
Yes, sir. I've had experience with clawbacks that work, and I've had experience with clawbacks that don't work. Uh-huh. And sometimes they can't work. You know, sometimes you, as you know, Bob, as a highly successful business person, sometimes you make investments that if they don't work, they don't work. And that's the nature of life. And I think we probably all had some of those. But to the extent to which we are able to measure performance and measure out our investments based on seeing results, that's what I want to be able to do. But, yeah, I've seen clawbacks that work great, and I've seen clawbacks where all you do is paw the air.
Well, it's worth the time and effort. It's a good thought.
Well, knowing there's a clawback in there might keep you in the game longer.
Yeah.
Okay, any more comments, members? We only have one person signed up for a public comment. Cal Zethmar. Cal? Okay. That's the only person. Is there anyone that would like to speak? Commissioner Dozier, you're recognized. Come on up. State your name, address. Go ahead.
I think from a policy guideline perspective, I think we helped a little bit today. That was the purpose of Senator Gates preparing sort of a here we're way out here. Okay, it's time to bring it in just a bit more narrow. And I think by having each member of the committee or of TRIOMP make comments as to here's what I'm thinking, over the next 2 or 3 weeks, I don't think you'll ever get into the form of a specific policy, but I think you'll see guidelines like what we talked about today begin to probably narrow even more. That help?
Yes, sir.
Am I speaking out of place, out of turn, members? Steve?
I say one thing. In the past, I'm one of the persons that have advocated for the counties to prioritize on the projects. And again, you know, my logic in thinking behind that is I'm an Okaloosa County resident. I know Bay County, but I don't know Bay County like you do. You know, understanding what your needs are, again, I can take those 15 proposals and I can make my best judgment on them. But man, it would sure be nice if there was, if y'all weighted them somehow or ranked them somehow that says, if I only had so many dollars, this is what I would do with my dollars. And I know personally I'm going to give a lot of weight. In the legislation, it specifically asked for us to get recommendations from counties, get projects from counties. But I know personally I'm going to place a lot of weight on the county recommendations. And if they were weighted and give us some direction, I believe it's going to help me personally evaluate those proposals. So, even though you haven't done it yet, if you keep it in the back of your mind, I don't know how everyone else feels about it, but I would personally like that additional bit of information.
Yes, sir.
Never hurts.
And I think the pre-app process was supposed to help everyone determine whether those projects met the guidelines. And I know in our application we had two sets of criteria. We had statutorily where does your project fall by statute, what does it meet, and then we had a list of Dr. Danny
discretionary
priorities that we had in there. So if you take a look at those, that should A, be able to help you to determine whether it falls within legislation, and then also falls within our discretionary priorities.
Dr. Dana?
Just on Steve's comments, I'm not so concerned about the county's ranking like 1 through 5 or 1 through 10 projects, but that the counties recognize the project and show their support for what they consider good or priority projects. And the reason why I'm not so concerned with the ranking is 1 through 5 or 1 through 10 is because it kind of puts you guys in a political spot where you get a lot of pressure on you from various applicants wanting that top position or wanting number 2. So anyway, just your knowledge of the projects and your support therein is helpful.
There was no requirement in the pre-application for them to come through the counties. So in various counties handle that in different ways. So there's no requirement for a pre-application to have gone through a county to have been considered. Obviously, the county can opine on that project if they choose to at any time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mike Langton, Langton Consulting, Jacksonville, Florida. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll be very, very quick. I think it would be helpful to the applicant community, and you already have 122 of them, participants, if you could clarify either today or very soon whether how the process is going to work. Do the 122 that put pre-applications, should they wait for you to rank them, to evaluate them, and encourage them to submit an application, which is, I think, where you're going, or can they submit full applications now? If you can clarify that, because I think it's real important to the process of the applicants.
Ms. Skelton.
And Mr. Chairman, as we have announced regularly, the pre-applications, that period is open at any time. A person can turn in a pre-application or an application. For administrative purposes, we would prefer that people would wait until they receive notification back from the review panel before they submit their application. There's no reason to not start working on an application if you're pretty sure it's going to meet their criteria. But for administrative purposes, it would be helpful to us not to have them flowing in on top of the pre-applications. So if people could wait until they receive notification back from the review panel to go ahead, that would be the preferred route. But anyone can turn in anything at any time. I'm open 24/7 to applications and pre-applications and anything else that flows through. So, but for our consistency, we prefer that you wait, if you've turned in a pre-application, until you get notification back from the review panel as to when and how to go forward with your application.
I think that clarity is very important, because I've looked at the applications. There are a lot of applications that don't meet any of the criteria you just talked about today. None of the criteria. Not one of them, but not all of them, but not one of them. So to allow them to start to the time and energy it takes to put a full application in would not be prudent. So a clarity of the process, as Ms. Skelton has just outlined from the board, I think would be very helpful to the applicant community.
As we finish up our staffing, as we've talked about earlier in the meeting, we're going to start digging into those pre-applications. Anyone else like to speak? Okay, members, any more comments? Connolly, you're recognized.
Chairman, thank you. I allow you to just give me a little liberty to make a little tribute here. If I'm not mistaken, this may be our last formal meeting with you as our chair. Now, we may have indeed a called meeting on the phone before Senator Gates takes over his chair after the first of the year, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you. Many of us have been on this journey with you, and even if you weren't formally on this Triumph board yet, we've been on this journey with you regardless, because we're part of the Northwest Florida community. You have shepherded us through an awful lot since the Triumph Gulf Coast was created, and certainly we continue to owe a debt of gratitude to Senator Gates and Speaker Weatherford for their work to help make that happen. But following the legislation being approved and signed, you have shepherded us in a way that brought us to where we are today. And I know it's been your desire to get a check out before the end of the year. But I do, I just tremendously respect your respect of the process to get us set up right, to get us ready to go. And sometime next year, we're going to see the fruit of that labor. And I just want to say thank you to you. You've been a great leader. You've been a champion of this cause, along with many others, and I think we owe you a great debt of gratitude, along with many others, for bringing us where we are today. Thank you for your leadership, and look forward to working with you in a slightly different role, but continuing on this board.
Thank you. Good man. Thank you. Thank you. One thing you're right about, it's been a long journey. This last session was tough. I mean, it was every day, and but ultimately, the father of this project is sitting to my left, and he will make a wonderful chairman. And, you know, we helped give birth. You gave birth to it. I took it through the first year or two of life, 3 or 4 years of life, and I think we're set up now with a good set of parents. And now you can, now you're ready. Now we're ready to really rock and roll. And I can't think of better hands for it to be in than not just yours, but what a great board. It's a super board. Having said that, comments are over. We're adjourned.
All right. Good job.